Tell you what she's got, brand new shoes. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. My name is Robert Norse, and the name of the show is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. Today is January 7th, 2010, and I'm, I got a number of things I want to talk about. I kind of made a commitment to begin the show by talking about Vice Mayor Ryan Coonerty and his comments regarding comments on the Sentinel website, or actually it's the topics section of the Sentinel website. Not quite sure who controls what around that issue, but critical comments were made in the online Sentinel under the comments section after a couple of stories, and Coonerty complained about it, encouraging editor Don Miller to monitor more closely what was going on, and this provoked an appropriate and understandable flood of outrage from people who, unable to speak at city council because of the Matthews-Coonerty two-minute limit, I should say the Rotkin-Matthews-Coonerty two-minute limit, and that's really Previously, it was 3 minutes, which is not a huge improvement, but was 50% more time, I guess. Coonerty has also cooked up other rules that have made it very difficult to comment on more than one or two subjects on the consent agenda, which most substantive business of the city is done, though it's usually kind of a done deal by the staff. Almost everything at City Council is a done deal by the staff. But this controversy is really an interesting one, and you can follow it by going to the Sentinel website. Go to the Santa Cruz Sentinel, and I'm going to try and do that right now. Indeed, there it is, www.santacruzsentinel.com. And then you Google for, I guess, Coonerty, and you'll find his, well, you don't Google, you search for Coonerty, and you'll find his, the story. Well, Ryan Coonerty encouraged younger voices in government. Actually, I'm going to find this story by going to the email that I got from activist Becky Johnson this afternoon, which alerted me to what was going on. And let me go back to that and see if I can find that here. Santa Cruz Sentinel online forum draws ire. Well, actually, it was a story in the Santa Cruz Weekly, which is the Metro with a new name. An article by Curtis Cartier. If you go to Santa Cruz Weekly or Santa Cruz Metro and look for a little current issue, January 7th, he writes, sit through any through the public comment section of any Santa Cruz City Council meeting or for a quick look, laugh on YouTube, search Santa Cruz and click the first result. And one thing becomes very clear, there is no shortage of strong opinions amongst the locals. And, of course, Cartier is referring to a dissing of any dissidents, either at City Council or on the Topics website. I mean, it's interesting that people on the Topics website are often highly critical of my homeless civil rights positions and my positions regarding lawsuits against the city for violations of, well, everybody's civil rights at City Council. But they have strong opinions about Vice Mayor Coonerty for a number of reasons. At least in the past month or two, Coonerty has sort of come out with a sort of a come on down to the downtown, it's a safe place to be, in spite of the Sentinel's ramped up the stabbings, the beatings, the horror downtown, which I acknowledge there have been a number of those, but does that amount to an unsafe scene downtown? I don't think so. In a certain sense, I agree with Coonerty. In another sense, Coonerty has played on this sense of insecurity to pass a whole variety of laws that don't have too much to do with public safety, but have everything to do with getting poor people out of sight on the whim of a merchant or a resident or the caprice of a police officer, because it's so hard to find real places to sit, remaining places to sit downtown. Benches have been removed, statues are put in, further constricting the space, not because you can't sit on top of a statue, but because Coonerty and company passed an extremely restrictive, deceptive law a year ago in January, specifying that you can't sit within 10 feet, actually within 14 feet of one of the statues downtown on the sidewalk. You can see most clearly how this destroys public space, mostly for poor people, but really for other people too, like elderly residents. I've talked to them, people who live in the at Cathcart and Pacific, for instance, in the 2010 apartments there. I think they're 2010 apartments, is that right? In any case, the apartment building on that corner. They pulled out the two benches near Quiznos, and they put in a statue, which meant not only can't you sit on the benches, you can't sit on the ground either. It's really kind of a culture war, and it's being done by the staff with the connivance and perhaps the direction of the Coonerty, Matthews, Robinson sort of, they call themselves the Downtown Issues Group, or they did. They may have changed their makeup somewhat, but they are a secretive city council, a group of three who meets with staff heads, business people, police and so forth, but not with the public, and their meetings are not open to the public, or at least this was the case within the last 2 years, and they cook up these schemes. It's hard to find out what goes on there. You can get the minutes of their meetings. I did at one point, but they're kind of circumspect in how they proceed with their meetings. This city council and this city staff don't leave much of a paper trail on a number of issues. For instance, the removal of more than half the benches mandated by, what was it called? The original Santa Cruz program after the earthquake, Vision Santa Cruz, I believe it was called. They're all mostly gone. And if you try to find out why they were taken out, because there were no hearings held, there's no paper trail indicating when the benches were taken out, where they are now, what provocation was involved, how long before they come back, whether there's going to be any replacement, et cetera, et cetera. None of that is available. And if you put in a Public Records Act request, Steve Hammack of Parks and Rec and Danette Shoemaker will tell you, we have no records. And it's almost as though they intentionally don't keep records, or, you know, they're not telling the truth about it. And it's hard to tell what the actual situation is. Anyway, Coonerty has supported this kind of stuff, restricting public space in the name of safety. His famous parking lot panic law, which makes it illegal to sit in your car and read a book in any of the 10 square blocks downtown that make up 25 parking lots and garages, even if you're changing the diapers on your baby, or you're, you know, waiting for a class or waiting for a movie or just chatting with a friend outside a vehicle. You're not allowed to do any of that, according to Coonerty's law. Now, of course, I've not heard of middle-class people being ticketed under this law. It's used to go after homeless people who sleep in parking garages, even though sleeping is already illegal, or come in out of the shelter from the rain in those garages. It's used to go after youth that they suspect of engaging in drinking or marijuana smoking. And it's also used for the legitimate purpose, if, you know, in the sense that there is a legitimate purpose for this kind of a law, of, you know, questioning people who might be casing cars to burgle them, or, you know, threatening, you know, kind of laying in wait for some innocent woman to come along and terrorize her, or just hanging around and spare changing, for God's sake, you know, in a grubby and gross and evil manner. But the idea that you want to abandon the right of the public to use public spaces, wall it off, unless you're just getting your vehicle and leaving, is a Coonerty special, and it's only in Santa Cruz. And the irony here is that Coonerty is a constitutional lawyer. I'm told by activist Becky Johnson that he isn't licensed in California. He is licensed, I think, in some other state. He teaches up at the University of California, and I believe he also has classes at Cabrillo at different points. And he gets a mixed report card from his students as to his teaching abilities, and that actually I've been reading about that recently. But his constitutional perspective is sort of unconstitutional. And it's interesting. And this is seen most vividly by the fact that he's antagonized people on the left and on the right. Most notably, and again, the subject of this discussion, the folks who want to be able to criticize Coonerty on the comments to the Sentinel stories without fear of having their comments removed or censored, although that happens as well. And there's no clear standards for that that I'm aware of, though maybe there is. I'm not really closely, I don't spend a lot of time on the topics. Topics is sort of the generic name for a variety of comment sections for a variety of newspapers, but it also covers the Santa Cruz Sentinel, in case you want to put a comment on one of the articles, which I occasionally do, and then, of course, get thoroughly blasted for my trouble. I did post tonight, or earlier this evening, this afternoon, actually, the comment that I would be on the air and I'd be welcoming calls from anybody who wants to talk about this issue, about Ryan Coonerty's latest statements, and I began to read this article by Curtis Cartier in the Santa Cruz Weekly. The phone number here, in case you want to jump the gun here and interrupt my tirade, is 427-3772, 427-FRSC for Free Radio Santa Cruz. And there's an alternate number, 469-3119. Again, 427-3772 and 469-3119. Cartier writes, when does healthy public discourse become offensive and harmful hate speech? It's a question that the Santa Cruz Sentinel editor Don Miller and his staff try to answer every day on the online forums connected to their newspaper. Hundreds of readers post hundreds of comments online each day in response to articles published by the Sentinel. And while the majority pen civil and insightful remarks, I can't really agree with that. Of course, it depends on the story, just the ones I've been involved with or found of interest and seen. I've seen just a variety of personal attacks on Becky Johnson, attacks on me, very little of substance about the issues that we raise. But nonetheless, you know, certainly people should have a right to make comments. And they want to call me a fat, overprivileged scumbag, you know, who doesn't live in Santa Cruz. And I spent half my time here and actually have had a residence in Santa Cruz and do at times have a residence in Santa Cruz. I go back and forth, but I spend probably more time in Santa Cruz than most of the people who are on the Topics website. I don't know for sure, but I spend a lot of time here, and I consider it my home, this general area, and get a little defensive about this, as you can see. But the right to make such comments about me or anybody else, particularly about the vice mayor, the mayor, any other public official, is really an essential right. I mean, if you don't have the right to do that, then you are in trouble. We are in trouble. We're in trouble anyway because, you know, they let us talk ourselves blue in the face, but if we try to do something meaningful to change things, then, you know, off come the gloves. It becomes very difficult to do it. We're in an entrenched system here, which is very hard to change and is immiserating people every day and, of course, creating the likelihood, growingly, of a nuclear holocaust abroad. And that won't just be abroad, of course. That'll be at home as well. And, of course, driving us into debt with this endless foreign occupation and sort of murder incorporated masquerading as military necessity. Murder incorporated for corporate interests to protect the ass and the prestige of the military that's already deep into various Middle Eastern countries that should never have had anything to do with in the first place. So, should the Topics website, should the comments on the Sentinel be censored because Vice Mayor Coonerty finds that he doesn't like them? Well, I'm sure he would say no to that, of course. But yet he seems to be, if the story by Curtis Cartier is correct, huddling with editor Don Miller and encouraging Miller to do just that. Now, I was going to call Coonerty and invite him on the air. And if anybody's listening to this show, I encourage you to give him a call at home and invite him on the air. Yes, his number is public. It's probably in the phone book. It's an answering machine, probably. He doesn't usually answer his phone directly. He hasn't returned a phone call or an email from me in years, literally. And I understand he's not particularly responsive to a number of other people on this. I mean, he doesn't get on the Topics website to debate his critics. In a way, I can understand that. I don't much because they're so vitriolic in many cases. But his choice not to debate is a little different than mine. He's a public official, and people have a much broader and more legitimate concern with what he's doing with their time and their money than what I do in terms of protests downtown and critical commentary about public officials. I mean, it's just my opinion. I'm not any big powerhouse here. Whereas Coonerty, is the vice mayor. He's been on the city council, elected twice, and, you know, he's involved with three thriving businesses downtown. And he's a key player, probably headed for higher political office. Most of these clowns are. I don't mind calling them clowns because I find them, it's humorous to watch somebody like Coonerty pose as a constitutional attorney or, you know, have a label on his chest, constitutional attorney, and then go after constitutional rights as he's doing. Well, here we can see the right wing most finding this out because of his commentary, you know, his attempt to. Well, it looks like it's hard to tell whether Curtis Cartier is not the most accurate reporter in the world. But if Curtis's analysis is correct, it's actually a very favorable analysis for Coonerty, suggesting that maybe there is hate speech, you know. And indeed, there's a lot of stuff that I certainly strongly disagree with. And I might characterize it as hate speech in a certain sense, but not something you should censor about, you know, immigrants. Those dirty immigrants, they're taking all our jobs. And, you know, that is, in fact, a strategy of corporations to, you know, get cheap labor. I mean, there's no question about it. The real question, however, is the rights of the people who come into this country, as our ancestors did, and to, you know, survive and do decent and honest work without being maligned for their race. But, you know, if people are going to be maligned for their race on a website like the Santa Cruz Sentinel, it's important to hear it and see it as it happens, because if you don't, if you hide it and you conceal it, I think it becomes that much more powerful. I guess the alternate argument is, well, if you suppress it, people will be more circumspect. They'll be better people. They'll follow the no smoking zone rules and so forth and so on. I'm kind of jumping around here, but the idea that repression and a good you know yardstick on the knuckles will teach the children to behave. But we aren't children, we're adults, and right or wrong, we have opinions, and we have a right to those opinions. Again, call a number here if anybody wants to talk on this issue is 427-3772. You can check this article out in the Santa Cruz Weekly. There is a group of people who post on these boards, and their negativity and craziness permeates everything, says Santa Cruz Vice Mayor Ryan Coonerty, who says he met with Miller in November to discuss the issue, and it's kind of ominous to me. I think the newspaper has a lot of responsibility because they are creating the forum and profiting from it. If you're going to create a public forum for speech, then you have a responsibility to keep these kinds of hateful comments out of it. Of course, he's not being very clear about what he means. He's saying, you know, shoot down Ryan Coonerty at 5 o'clock tomorrow with a gun that I provide. Well, okay, I can understand being concerned about that kind of comment. But if you say, what a slimy, you know, cheesy lawyer, like the kind of commentary that I make or that somebody else might make is perfectly, it should be sanctioned free speech that doesn't get hassled. And to have Coonerty go after it is understandable from his point of view and really in keeping with his philosophy, which masquerades as progressive but actually is nothing of the kind, but is not something that a number of us can support. Anyway, there's more about this on this story. You can go to the Santa Cruz Sentinel online forum. You can go to the Santa Cruz Weekly, and I don't know if there's been much discussion. I think I'm looking up messages, and I find no messages. It's hard to believe that there were no messages on this Santa Cruz Weekly site on the issue about Coonerty meeting with Sentinel editor Miller just to do some censoring or to do some serious monitoring of hate speech. So it makes me wonder if the Santa Cruz Weekly site isn't itself somewhat censored, so to speak, or not willing to have a discussion of these issues. There is a website where this is discussed, however. It's a particular thread. And if you want to go, you can go to it, if I can find the damn thing. Let's see, it's loading. Ryan Coonerty declares war against Sentinel Topics Forum. If you Google for Ryan Coonerty declares war, you'll probably get to it. As of, starting 22 hours, it's already got 77 comments. And it was begun by a guy called Richard Saunders. People using their full names, which is unusual for the Sentinel forums of the articles I've been reading, are unafraid to say who they are and how outraged they are. Richard Saunders writes, "It was the most disgusting display of political pressure against a city newspaper I've ever seen in America." Donald Filano writes, "I've often read things and topics that later end up getting added to rewrites of the articles. There's a lot of garbage and hate in the forum, but some of the posters are way more on top of things than the Sentinel reporters. Worried about Santa Cruz? To me, free speech needs to be kept free unless there is a truly compelling yell fire reason to limit it. Sure, many of the posters seem to know more than the politicians." And there are even people defending me and defending Becky Johnson as gadflies or as critics of Coonerty. For example, there's some just talk about going to city council and going up to the microphone and going Heil to Vice Mayor Coonerty during the oral communications period when it wouldn't be even under the very restrictive interpretation that is being what was used to arrest me back in 2002 for not even saying Heil, but just raising my arm briefly in a "you're acting like a bunch of fascists" salute. It's legal under the city attorney's own opinion to hold up your arm in a salute and say Heil during your oral communication because it doesn't disrupt. For my money, you should be able to say it any time, provided you don't do it in such a prolonged way that it disrupts the business. I mean, that's the point. You know, the city council is not a sewing circle that the public comes to be, domesticated and say yes sir, yes sir to the city council. Unfortunately, it often is, but it shouldn't be. Instead, it's supposed to be the place where our legislature meets and has to deal with the people. That's why we have a Brown Act because this council meetings have to be open whether the council likes it or not. They have to allow you an opportunity to speak whether they like it or not. They have to allow criticism whether they like it or not. And the way they get around this is they cut back public time. They will interrupt you and claim that you're being disrespectful, in which the response is, you bet. That's exactly why I'm up here, to show I don't respect the decisions you're making. So it's an ongoing process of increasing repression at City Council and in Santa Cruz generally as the police gets beefed up. It's a kind of the domestic and local equivalent of the war on terror, which, of course, is a terror-ridden activity that's creating, of course, opponents, who then they call terrorists, and is kind of its own machine for creating more jobs for those kinds of security people, and more weapons for those who have to arm the security people, and more profits for those who benefit from these military interventions. And, of course, more death and destruction and misery for those who suffer. And, of course, full employment for those who want to become like the Roman Praetorian Guard, or who want to become the Roman legions and troops abroad occupying foreign and domestic populations of people and exploiting them, in essence, putting in puppet rulers like Karzan in Afghanistan and what's his name in Iraq. His name is on the tip of my tongue. Let's take a brief musical break, and I'll be right back. Again, call-in number here is 427-3772.
If only Lois knew Clark Kent could see through her dress, she could have flown to his arms and uncovered his ass. She could have torn off his trousers, discovered his tights. He wouldn't put up a fight. If only Lois knew that at the time of ascent, Superman blasted off and there wasn't no Kent. She could have clung to the wingspan, a fly on the wall. He wouldn't let her fall, but her mouth never moved and her hair stayed in place. Too little magic in so stiff a face. Framed in the bunnies, captioned and stripped. 10 cents a copy, too cheap a script. If only Lois knew that Kent was light years away, that in the name of Krypton, he was saving the day. She could have left on his deno one single bound, but he was never around. She wouldn't know love if it wasn't out flying, and he broke all her pencils without trying. If he took off his glasses, then he blew her a kiss, and a windstorm ensued in Metropolis. Oh, Lois was lost on the man made of granite, locked in her own daily planet. If only Lois knew that at the scene of a crime, Kent was not to be seen, but always filed on time. He always scooped up the story in super disguise. She always looked so surprised. He kept an X-ray eye upon her. She slept alone on Loveless Lane. He never saw. Never took her on his plane. She didn't like the meek and shrinking. She always thought she'd like to fly. He always knew what she was thinking when she was staring at the sky. She wouldn't know love. It only went in one way, taking off with her desk as a runway. If he told her the truth and the rules of the order, as he dressed in the phone booth, then he asked her for quarters. Lois was lost on the man made of granite, lost in her own daily planet. see through her dress. She could have flown to his arms and uncovered his ass. She could have had herself a layout, some news she could feel, with a man made of steel.
And that was Lois Lane from Boys Like Sex in the Morning. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. And, hey, call-in number is 427-3772, but we have a caller. Hey there, caller.
Your call cannot be completed as dialed.
Oh, boy.
Please check the...
Caller, try calling back again. Looks like he gave up on us, so that was actually a caller that was pointing out that the language that was used is that it's not contractors that they use overseas that are really making up most of the military occupation teams in Iraq and Afghanistan, but they're really mercenaries. That's what they are. You know, people who are getting paid to oppress other people, shoot them dead if they protest too vigorously, and help loot the country or at least follow the orders of the occupying forces. These are poor countries that did not invade the United States, did not declare war on the United States, but are nonetheless being occupied by the United States without a declaration of war. Under the leadership of our great Führer, that's Barack Obama, you may remember, the guy that many of you voted for last November. I walked around town yesterday with a big sign on my chest because I was feeling kind of disgusted, saying, Obama's war, when will you speak out? And it was very eerie. I must have passed... oh, I don't know, about 100 people, and I found one person who I knew made a comment, but everybody else just sort of looked away as if that was, you know, oh, we're not talking about that. And it was just strange, really strange. We have a caller. Hi there, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Yeah, I had to hang up a second ago to get my battery charger. But yeah, I was on a second. I was the guy talking about mercenaries to Robert, but not on the radio.
We are on the radio now. Yes, go ahead.
Hey, it's Chip.
Hey, Chip. And this is not Chip of the executive director, front boy for the Downtown Association. You are a local photographer, right?
Right, yeah. I just wanted to focus on the corporate media for a second.
Okay.
It's the language, not even the facts that they give you. They're always talking about contractors. Just now, every media outlet is talking about contractors getting killed in the CIA compound in Afghanistan, and contractors, you know, Blackwater. Blackwater is not a contractor. Contractors are people that build porches for the people that I pay rent to. The corporate media is just trying to confuse you by saying contractors. If they use terminology that's right, words like mercenaries, the average citizen that's not paying much attention, trying to survive because everybody's so oppressed, would realize that their tax dollars aren't going to contractors, they're going to mercenaries, hired killers. You know, people who are under no constraint. It's not a democratic process.
Well, you're not going to get any argument from me, although the problem here is not what you call them, but how do we stop them? And I'm afraid...
Right, but no, the first way of stopping any situation is to shed clarity to the situation.
Right,
people
well, you know...
People just are fuzzy, you know? It's like calling freedom fighters insurgents, you know? It's
right,
just
sure.
Automatically, you know, saying facts. The facts are meaningless. It's the words you use to get people to kind of have this fuzzy complacency about what's going on.
Sure. I think what we need, however, is to identify the local contractors, as I've repeatedly asked the city council to do, at least in terms of the money that is being invested by the city council and also who they pay to do their city work, like Camp Dresser and McKee, the contractor that they're paying $2 million for desal plant happening. And studies around that. This is like the 54th biggest profiteer in the Middle East, according to, what is it, Alternet? I'm not sure. One of the websites that's a sort of, you know, a lefty monitoring website that covers this. I can't get anybody, including the great Green Party guru, Tim Fitzmaurice, when he was in office, or Mike Rotkin, that sofa-bed socialist who's now our mayor, or anybody in the city council to actually look into who the city is investing its money with, and whether these whether any mercenaries involved or profiteers. You know, they're not interested. You know, they just don't give a shit. You know, they don't mind saying, I oppose the war. You know, but you're not going to find them sitting in Sam Farr's office on January 20th when there's going to be a nationwide civil disobedience effort by a variety of groups ranging from the Coalition on Homelessness in San Francisco to Code Pink to all kinds of groups, including HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which may actually find their way to Sam Farr's office with, who knows, a lockdown device? Wouldn't that be interesting? Haven't done that one for a while. Anyway, I agree with you. I think you got to call a spade, you know. You got to call the city council the Gang of Seven, which it is. And you've
right.
got
well,
to call murderers
call,
murderers, you know.
You know, you've got to call a problem rather than the solution. And the more clarity you can bring to a situation, any situation, the more likely you'll understand it. But the bottom line is the media is not there to help you understand. It's to help keep you a sheep in a nation, you know, that's owned by wolves and pigs, you know, and we're sheep. So I feel bad about it. Talk to you later.
Uh-huh. Sure. Thanks, man. And phone lines are open, 427-3772. We actually have some silent partners in the studio are groaning and grunting. Actually, one of them is about to leave. I should call the police to make sure he doesn't get out the door. Let me give you the location of the studio. Well, actually, that'll be ill-advised. And we have a sheepish person in the studio. But who knows? We may get some comments from our studio guests. We may get nothing. I do note that my comment that said, those who wish to discuss the topic on the radio today can tune into free radio, was removed by the Topic Sentinel website. It only appears because it was referred to by another commenter who said, would that be an illegal pirate station? And indeed, we are an illegal pirate station, which apparently is being censored by the Topic's website. Interesting here. But there are still many interesting comments remaining on this Topic's website, including one which kind of leads me into the next subject of a protest that we had yesterday downtown. HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, showed up in front of the Bookshop Santa Cruz for 2 hours, singing sort of satirical homeless songs to the tune of Christmas carols. Actually, we didn't really get into that. We did that in a previous engagement. But we have a song we often do, and SAFE, Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, which is a weekly singing group, also does outside on the sidewalk. Downtown, which is the Petula Clark song, done to other lyrics. And I've sung a bit of it on the radio, and who knows, maybe I'll even tune up my throat tonight and try singing a little tonight. But in fact, we had a table with some petitions urging people to consider police misconduct downtown. We had a list of the homeless dead named at the homeless memorial last December. There are 58 of them, although only 47, I think, were named. And that's almost triple the number from last year of the homeless dead in Santa Cruz County. So it's a pretty grim statistic. And even grimmer, of course, is the live homeless people who have to deal with, not to mention the rest of us, who have to deal with this whole matrix of laws that give the police a lot of power downtown and also criminalize essential life functions of homeless people, like the right to sleep, not anywhere and everywhere, but somewhere, you know, in Santa Cruz, where it's completely illegal for a homeless person to fall asleep after 11 o'clock at night unless they're in a house or hotel. Or in the armory, which holds only 75, maybe 100 if they cram people in, out of 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people. And again, I've never quite understood how the people who were rant and rave in favor of this law, or try to argue persuasively for it, as Mayor Mike Rutkin repeatedly does when I have him on the air, can argue that with any sense or compassion or logical coherence, even. It doesn't make sense to me. Anyway, we had a protest yesterday in front of the Bookshop Santa Cruz. It was supposed to be kind of a routine protest. We were concerned about, I think the original impetus for this protest came a couple weeks ago when compassion-free Coonerty, as I like to call him, the vice mayor and the Bookshop Santa Cruz family member, manager, who knows what he is these days. He likes to think he's divorced from the downtown business, but it's really hard to believe that. And indeed, he came out of the store yesterday when we were there, although, of course, anyone has a right to go in the store. His sister owns the store, so, I mean, that would be understandable. But I still have a suspicion that he has a pretty close connection with the Bookshop Santa Cruz. And since he doesn't return phone calls elsewhere, you have to go to where he is as a council member to try to make some impact. And I think even people who are critics of mine on topics understand this. So what was unusual about this event yesterday was we did some singing. There were just a few of us, and we had relatively few songs. There were, I think, Downtown was sung twice over a period of an hour and a half. And there was also a couple of Christmas carols. Our Let It Snow was being sung. And while Let It Snow was being sung, a police officer arrived and told everybody, you have to leave because there's been a complaint. The implication being, if anybody complains about a political song, you have to leave. Well, of course, that's not how the police officer put it, because they said it was too loud. But it wasn't unusually loud. It was standard for that time of day. So we thought this was not a particularly fair criticism. And we said, after some argument back and forth, we said to the officer, I think it was Officer Schoenberg, she's a new police officer, a female police officer on the beat downtown, look, if you want us to keep it quieter, we'll do that. And she was saying, well, unless you leave or keep it quieter, this citizen who doesn't want to is going to file a citizen's arrest, and we're going to give you a ticket, and you'll have to go to court, and so forth. Didn't say that to me. They said that to, Becky Johnson, who was doing the singing when the officer arrived. And so we finally got the officer to agree that if the singing were quieted down, that would be okay, which is unusual, because really what the police have been doing with singers in the last couple of weeks, actually the last couple of years, or last decade actually, one might say the last two decades, is they want to drive the singers away by telling them, if a citizen makes a complaint, you have to go. This, of course, is a falsehood. The question is whether the singer is violating the so-called excessive noise law. The excessive noise law, I've read on the station a number of times before. It's really an unconstitutionally vague and bizarre law from 1980, which reads as follows. This is between the hours of 8 a.m. and 10 p.m. After that, during nighttime, there's a different law that requires you to be quieter, but this is what it says. No person shall make, cause, suffer, or permit to be made any noises or sounds, A, which are unreasonably disturbing or physically annoying to persons of ordinary sensitiveness, or which are so harsh or so prolonged or unnatural or unusual in their use, time, or place as to cause physical discomfort to any person, and, there's a second condition, B, which are not necessary in connection with an activity which is otherwise lawfully conducted. This is Chapter 9.20, I think 0.02, of the Santa Cruz Municipal Code. I'm not quite sure if it's 02 or 03 or 01, but that's called unreasonably disturbing noises. And they have to be careful here, because the First Amendment protects unreasonably disturbing speech, and it would presumably protect unreasonably disturbing songs. And therefore, it has to be, the words physically disturbing, let me get this exactly right, physically annoying, physical discomfort are a significant part of this, plus the requirement that there be no lawful activity, that not be necessary to do this in accord with the lawful activity. Now, obviously, if we're in front of Coonerty's bookstore protesting Coonerty's lack of compassion, and I'm referring here, I kind of skipped over this, but Coonerty was quoted in the paper as saying he didn't think it was a good idea for Ron A. Curry, a downtown religious provider for poor and homeless people, to give away burritos and beanies and sleeping bags to homeless people on Sunday afternoon, as she does. And this, of course, provoked a certain amount of amazement and outrage. Who is Coonerty to say this? He and Coonerty, in all fairness, suggested, well, you know, they're only going to sell them and buy booze, or they're only going to lose them, or maybe they're going to, you know, I don't know what they're going to do. Chief Ranger will steal them and throw them away, so what's the point? Because that's what's happening in the Poganip. People's survival gear is trashed illegally by our city-funded, city-supported, mayor-backed Chief Ranger John Wallace and his labor-ready cleanup crews. So Coonerty was saying, give your money to charities, don't give your money to the poor. The point being, we don't want them panhandlers hanging around downtown. You know, they make the tourists nervous, or they make the store owners nervous. They make somebody nervous. And they're only, all the money only goes for drugs and needles and booze and good times. You know, these are bums. This is the whole stereotype. So we were in front of the Bookshop Santa Cruz initially as a part of that, as well as to raise the issue of the homeless dead, and to also raise some other issues, like we had a petition for a tent city. We had a petition for firing and prosecuting bad cops. We had a petition for volunteering to boycott bigotry downtown by opposing bigoted laws. And I don't know if the actual – I'm trying to remember the wording of the third petition. I think in the summer we were concerned with particular businesses that were big or nominal backers of a bigoted behavior by the city attorney in going after two homeless musicians and Anna Richardson and Miguel de Leon, who are still being gone after. There is a court injunction hearing coming up in February for those two, who, if they fall asleep once in the city, according to the latest, I don't know, $50,000, $75,000, I don't know how much this thing cost, restraining order by the city, one act of sleeping in the downtown area after 11 o'clock at night means jail. Even though there's no legal place for people to sleep in Santa Cruz, generally, with the exception of the Armory and the Paul Lee Loft, which, again, takes up a total, I guess you could add 75 to 100 at the Armory, maybe 60 at the Paul Lee Loft, 60 to 80 perhaps. But again, that's less than 15% of the homeless population of Santa Cruz. So all this background, which I endlessly go into, and now we'll go back to the actual the exciting details of what happened yesterday. We had a protest, and we got the police officer said, stop the music, you know, or... And she actually interrupted the song, Let It Snow, Let It Snow, Let It Snow. Perhaps she was going to point out that it wasn't snowing, and therefore this was a form of false advertising. But her motivation was she was conveying a citizen complaint. It turned out from an individual named Sean Riley. And this is nothing against this particular individual. He has a right to his point of view. He doesn't like these songs. He was disturbed by the songs, the volume perhaps, the intensity. Nobody else was, as far as I know. But he was. The question is, should one person's opinion be the basis for censoring some singer on the street, particularly political singers? And the obvious answer is no. I mean, if people are screaming for long periods of time in such a way as to cause physical discomfort and not be in accord with a lawful activity, which is interesting because, you know, the law is very badly written. I believe this law won't stand up to just a preliminary constitutional challenge. I think a demurrer will throw this law out. It's vague. It's clearly, you know, it's hard to describe, you know, the defects of the law in detail, but it is, it's likely to fall, I think, under a demurrer. Because you obviously, singing on the street is a lawful activity. So anything you do, even loud, extremely loud noises, is legal under this law. So therefore, you can't really apply the law to give anybody a ticket. And if you attempt to do this, and this is what this police officer did. The police officer, in spite of telling us that we were not, you know, that we said, agreeing that if you quiet down, you know, that'll be fine, went over and took a citizen's arrest complaint from Sean Riley, and then came back to us and gave out four tickets on this basis, one of whom to a woman who wasn't even there, two of whom to people who weren't singing at all, really. I mean, and who certainly weren't unreasonably loud. The fourth ticket, you know, to a person who was singing regularly but not unreasonably loudly. And again, the idea that you can ticket people for singing based on the heckler's veto. It really seems to be part of the mechanism by which the Downtown Association and the Police Department have kind of combined to have a way of socially and economically cleansing the streets. That is to say, it's not really musicians they're going after. In this case, it is. We're not musicians, of course, though. We're activists, and we're protesting the downtown ordinances. And we're protesting them by singing songs. We're also protesting the behavior and the public speech of one of the downtown officials, the Santa Cruz vice mayor, Ryan Coonerty. To use a law in this fashion is a form of harassment. And also, the law itself, even if you're trying to use it legitimately, can't be used. It's really an unusable law. And it's actually been used over the last 20 years because I think nobody has had the cojones to take it to jail. It's used, it goes after poor musicians. They're afraid maybe they're going to lose their instruments. They want, musicians don't want to have trouble with the law. They want to just play. They want to play a little music. They're trying to get a little money. They're trying to have, express their messages there, to put out their feelings to the community. They make Santa Cruz a better town. In some cases, of course, the music sucks. Well, that happens too, but usually that's a sifting process where the street itself sifts that out. The idea that, and there is indeed another law that's used called the move-along law. Every hour, there's a bad law that was put into power in 2002, which says that if somebody doesn't like you and wants you to move your display device along, and display device can be a table, if you're a political tabler, a hat, or a guitar case, it's open if you're soliciting donations. That's the strange definition of a display device. They can require you to move your display device, not come back for 24 hours with that display device to set up another one, and in essence move you along. It's a very convoluted way of doing it, but that's how it happens. They had that option. We had been there for 2 hours, although we were in what's called the exempt zone, which makes it a little more problematic for them. There are two exempt zones in Santa Cruz that were created sort of by the city council. One is in front of the bookshop, and the other is in front of O'Neill's, across from the Cinema 9, where you're allowed to play close to statues. Normally, you can't play an instrument with an open guitar case within 10 feet of a statue, directory sign, crosswalk, kiosk, sidewalk cafe, building front, you name it. A whole list of prohibitions that create these huge forbidden zones, and even bigger forbidden zones for sitting, but forbidden zones for performers as well. Designed to give the police selective power to move people along they want to move along. This situation, the police officer was saying that she was innocent of any interest in moving us along. She was simply acting as a conduit for a citizen complaint. Here's a poor resident who lives above the bookshop Santa Cruz who didn't like who was trying to sleep at 2:30 in the afternoon and felt that gave her the right to censor music outside the door of a political nature. What the police officer should have done was she should have gone up to this individual and said, "This is the wording of the law. Watch out, because if you file a complaint against the people under this law, it's a false police report, because they are obviously conducting a lawful activity, and therefore the law doesn't apply. And you're also putting me, the police officer, in a bad position, because if I give them this citation and sign it myself, I am assisting, under color of law, in facilitating a false arrest." Arrest in this case means you're requiring someone to sign a citation and promise to go to court, or else you'll take them to jail. And that was threatened yesterday, quite explicitly, by Officer Schoenberg, I believe her name was. So we have this crackdown on the streets, which yesterday hit street performers. Four performers were accused of singing in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz too loudly by one resident. And even when they agreed to be quieter, they were still, each of them, given a $250 to $300 citation. I'm not quite clear how much it is with all the court costs. It's an expensive ticket. And this prompted an immediate chilling effect on a number of street performers who said they wouldn't come back because of this. And indeed, later that night, I saw the same officer going up to Suzanne and other performers at the corner of a block away of Soquel and Pacific, again saying, "There's been a complaint," as though that means get moving or you're going to get hassled and you're going to get ticketed, instead of the responsibility of the officer would be to go to the individual in question and say, you better go tell the city attorney to write a better law, or you better wait till after 10 o'clock when the law becomes more controlling on noise, or you better use the move-along law that says that the person has to move every hour. Otherwise, you know, you can't file this kind of complaint without laying yourself open to a civil lawsuit and laying me open to criminal prosecution. It's a misdemeanor for me, a police officer, to give a false ticket like this when I know, by the plain wording of the law, that this is essentially a use of a law to intimidate street performers on behalf of conservative residents and merchants under a scheme worked up by the Downtown Association, the police department, perhaps other groups like the Santa Cruz Neighbors, to deal with what they regard as annoying bad behavior downtown. And the problem here is, if it's really bad behavior, I'm all for, you know, methods of addressing bad behavior, assaults, abuse, wild and crazy drunkenness that, or people are vomiting all over me, or making me feel really, really uncomfortable in a sustained way. And there are statutes to deal with this. And there also might be other ways to deal with it involving getting community organizations involved. But merchants over the years have decided to use a different tack, and that is criminalizing all kinds of innocent behavior and then giving the police the option to pick and choose who they're going to pick out and what laws they're going to use to go after folks. So what happened to us yesterday was four of us got citations, myself, Becky Johnson, a woman named Michelle, and Robert Facer, who is currently fighting two sleeping ban tickets in court. And what's going to happen there, we have some tape of the whole thing, which will probably be played at least in part on the Sunday show, for those of you who are interested. That's Sunday from 9:30 in the morning to 1 o'clock in the afternoon. You can tune in. You can also catch these shows that are archived. They're all archived at huffsantacruz.org. It's possible that I actually have two witnesses to this event in the studio with me, but I don't know if they have any comments or if they wish to talk at this time. We had some discussions yesterday about this issue, and people immediately get very apprehensive about what may or may not be used by the city attorney or the other side to criminalize them for even being around. And in a way I can understand that, because one of the people who arrived had nothing to do with the singing, and she kept saying, I'm a teacher, I just arrived, I sat down here, what's this? And the officer paid no attention and said, oh, she said you're one of the people here, and I'm gonna you know, write you out a citation, even though, as said before, the law itself under which she was writing people's citations is fundamentally defective and also violates First Amendment rights, particularly when they're going after political singers. So we're in a strange situation where you have, should I call them bigots? I don't know. People who are hypersensitive or who decide they want to control what's going on the streets out in front of their where they're living. And there was one woman, you know, leaning out a window, shouting at us. Another guy screaming at us from his bike, you know, Norse, get out of town, get out of town. I'm so glad you're being ticketed, and so forth, which is fine. That's free speech. He has a right to say those kinds of things. And indeed, some people feel that way. They don't like the causes I'm pressing. And I can understand that. Some people find, you know, the idea that homeless people should have civil rights a very, not only annoying one, but disturbing one. And the idea that people are actually getting petitions around that, singing songs about that, criticizing public figures for that is an uncomfortable one. But since I've gone on for about an hour on the subject, with only one phone call and two party crashers here in the studio who don't seem eager to have anything to say, I'll invite you again, you listeners out there, to call in at 427-3772. And just to show you that I'm a fair and honest guy, there, even though my comment online was eliminated by the topics of the Sentinel story, the Sentinel website about whether Coonerty is a censoring kind of guy, And I invited people to call into my radio show, and that comment was taken off. Although, interestingly enough, it was retained in somebody else's comment. If you go on here, they may remove comments, but then you'll suddenly see somebody else refers to your comment, and so it comes back. It's kind of strange. But there was one comment of a person who... I saw RN and BJ, that's me, Robert Norris, and BJ, Becky Johnson's show yesterday. Aside from being hilarious, let's get some factoroos right. Ryan wasn't there. The police were giving them tickets from a citizen complaint. The citizen was there signing the tickets. He lives in the above apartments while Becky stuck a camera in his face harassing him. Well, documenting what he's doing and documenting what the police are doing, because whether he knows it or not, Sean Riley, who's the individual who gave those tickets, as he has in a sense a right to do it, but I think he's being misled by the police department that he has a right to do it. He doesn't really have a right to do it under that law, and if he does so and it has a chilling effect on people and frightens them, he's legally liable, particularly since he has no real claim against the people singing outside the window on the public sidewalk. The cop then, after we pointed this, I pointed out to the police officer, if you write us a citation under this law, we are going to, or at least I am going to, write a citation for, or demand that you write a citation, which I will sign, you don't have to sign it, for a false police report, making a false police report, because that's what they're doing. You're claiming that we're engaging in criminal activity when we're not, because it's clear that we have a legal purpose in being here. We are engaged in a lawful activity. And if we're engaged, which is, you know, free speech, singing on the sidewalk and protesting and in the proper zone, you know, and so forth. And therefore, you're trying to harass us and drive us away. And by doing that, you're trying to do so in an unconstitutional and illegal way. If you're going to allow this citizen to do this and you're going to countersign this ticket and force us to go to court under color of law, you are engaging in a form of illegitimate behavior. So we are. This is a false police report. This is a false arrest. I would like, you know, we'd like the other party to appear in court to answer that charge, because that, to me, is pretty clear. The law doesn't allow the law under. They're claiming we're violating a law, which we're not violating, for sure. I mean, there's no question. It's not a matter of how loudly we sing or speak. It's a matter of whether we're engaging in a lawful activity. That's what the law says. If we're engaging in a lawful activity, we actually could be screaming our heads off. That's how badly written the law is. However, you know, so they should be told, you can't write a citation for that. You can ask us to be quieter, and we agreed to do it. But instead of accepting that, and also, ironically, we were almost finished for the day, they want to drive us away. And make sure we don't come back, because if we came back within 48 hours, they can issue a second citation, which is a $1,000 fine and 6 months in jail if we're convicted as a maximum penalty. This one's only a $1,000 fine and no time in jail, just, I don't know, hundreds of hours of community service. So this is a form of the police and the Downtown Association empowering bigotry downtown, or empowering a very restrictive form of, well, the ability of private people to use the police as a private security force, even though the police department sort of washes its hands and says, see, we're not going after you. We'll only go after you if there is a complaint. And interestingly enough, if you ask who complains, they won't tell you unless you push it to the point where you force the person to sign the citation. Then, of course, this guy actually signed in an illegible way, but I demanded of the female officer, what's the damn guy's name? Thank you very much. And she gave it to me. She also committed herself to taking my complaint. However, once she had stalled everybody around there for half an hour or 20 minutes writing out these tickets, and I tried to write out a citation written out about this being a false police report, she wouldn't take it. And I was told that they would write a letter to the district attorney. It would be in their report. And if the district attorney wanted to file a charge, he could. And I said, well, why didn't you do that with the four citations? You know, don't I get equal treatment? And the answer was, is that all? We have to go now. So the police are acting as sort of agents of those who want to shut down protest on Pacific Avenue, at least the protest we were engaging in, under the color of it's excessive noise, even though, A, it wasn't excessive noise, B, we agreed to be quiet anyway, and C, the law they're using doesn't even allow, if it were extreme excessive noise, them to do that, and finally, D, the police, in the face of all this, these are supposed to be people who have some, at least they've read, they're supposed to have read the law, but, you know, one often feels the way the police officers are acting downtown, that they don't feel any obligation to read the law. They just, you know, kind of say move along, and because people say yes sir, three bags full, they do that. People, you know, they can just walk up to them, and indeed, somebody with a badge and a gun and a whole bunch of law books behind them and a bunch, you know, and an entire court system ready to haul you in, you generally think two or three times before saying, you know, I have a right to be here, officer, no disrespect for you as a person intended, though complete disrespect for what you're trying to do, you know. Write me a citation if you want, and I'll sue you later, you know, or, you know, do what you need to do, but I'm staying here continuing to sing this protest song, which I think is important for the community to hear. Simple as that. Anyway, this guy online is writing, has a critical point of view. Then people started heckling them from the above apartments. Actually, one woman started heckling us, so he may be exaggerating. Hilarious. Becky is screaming at them from the street, then starts screaming at a guy that was trying to agree with her. And it can be, I think that he's correct in that. I think Becky got, she misunderstood a kid who was circulating a petition who was actually trying to be supportive. But when you get into a situation where police are coming at you and other citizens who are, you know, kind of the police are using the citizens as a cat's paw to get rid of you or vice versa, then you tend to get a little paranoid. You tend to start being worried about other people, you know, being critical of you. And that, I think, was what happened with Becky. But, you know, I think he may have been accurate in that. And this guy finds this a lot of fun. You think topics are fun? You should hang out on Pacific and hope to bump into an RNBJ show. Losers. They come on here, but no one else cares. Well, they care enough to censor my comment. I mean, that's interesting. But I think some people do care. Otherwise, why write a citation when they're being promised that it's going to be quieter? And, you know, they were intimidating us. I don't think, you know, I don't think it was a matter of, gee, we're concerned about how people feel. I think one of our silent partners here is actually going to say something. What is it?
Well, we did ask the police officer several times whether we were too loud. She did hear the singing, and she refused to comment either way.
Right. That's another point. One of the strategies I've suggested to street performers is when a police officer comes up to you and says, stop playing because we've had a complaint, you're too loud, you could be heard from three blocks away, you know, that you say to the police officer, oh, really, you find it too loud? And the police officer will say, oh, yes, no, or they'll do what Officer Schoenberg did yesterday and say, I don't have to answer that question. I said, well, you know, clearly if you found it too loud, it would be a violation. Well, let me put it this way. If you're telling me that you're offering to write a citation, you believe this law is valid, you're going to write it for the citizen who thinks it too loud. If you thought it was too loud, you would also be obliged to write a citation because it would be violating the law. The fact that the law is, you know,
it's too vague.
Is a vague law.
How can you follow it if you don't know?
And unconstitutional. It's also vague. That's an additional fact. I read the law a few minutes ago for those who didn't. Those who just tuned in, what we're talking about is four citations for singing in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz yesterday against homeless activists downtown who actually didn't spend too much time singing. Mostly I was doing petitioning, so there was an occasional song. And the idea that this is illegal on Pacific Avenue at the whim of anybody, any resident who wants to complain, is, of course, a complete violation of the First Amendment. And it's vulnerable to a lawsuit. If the city is concerned about preserving its bucks, this is the wrong way for them to go. So, again, it was interesting. This subject did make its way onto the topic's website, which is mainly about Coonerty, Vice Mayor Coonerty, and his attempts to encourage essentially a more repressive attitude by editor Don Miller on comments that are, quote, hate speech or critical. One has to almost, I'm sure he wouldn't say critical of him, but one wonders if that isn't the motivation. And the interesting thing about this whole thread is that there are people who are saying, you know, much as we hate Norris and Johnson, you know, they're right in this respect, with respect to Coonerty. And that's an interesting thing to hear, although these are the same folks who don't mind free speech being removed downtown for singers. So there are a lot of contradictions that are wrapped up in this. Let's take a break, have some music, and who knows, maybe we'll actually hear from somebody out there. 427-3772 is the call-in number.
She put her heart in your hands, playing so carelessly, angles so easy to see. Worried alone by how natural it's getting to be. Well, how did you lose her, and now where were you gonna go? She's got some chances, but you, well, you're gonna run low. She may be close as you'll ever be getting home. Back where the sunlight's so bright it cuts right to the bone. Oh, how can you leave her and lose her the same way again?
Carol Denny, and I'm hearing some complaints from my fellow studioscomers here, and since I am very sensitive to complaints these days, I'm going to put on a song that they've called for that actually was sung downtown in a kind of a flailing manner. This Land is Your Land, and actually there was a song that was created by Sherry Connable called This Street is Your Street, about Pacific Avenue. Unfortunately, nobody had the lyrics, so people were kind of fumbling around trying to make it up. But here's a little of the original for all of you old-timers.
Land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream water. That ribbon of highway, I saw above me that endless skyway. I saw below me that golden valley. This land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island. From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me.
I roamed and I rambled, and I followed my footsteps to the sparkling sands of her diamond deserts, while all around me a voice was sounding, saying this land was made for you and me.
And enough of that. My goodness. Nice old song, but hey, we need some modern lyrics. Maybe we can get our silent studio guests to actually get on the ball and bring in some lyrics and do some singing of their own. I'm not going to reveal the names of people in the studio. That would be telling. But we have some singers here who actually were criminally involved yesterday in singing political songs in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz. I'm not going to say exactly who, but Sean, you better get busy because you missed a few. They slipped through your net. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. I'm Robert, and you might call me the criminal singer, actually. I'm henceforth be known as, I don't know, Mr. Big Throat. Fresno, Let's get down with Fresno here. Fresno has been experiencing, let me work on this, some interesting activism. Fresno, as you may know, was a site of a $2.3 million lawsuit successfully won by the homeless a few years ago. We're still trying to get our Parks and Rec to obey the law and stop destroying homeless property. But the Fresno activists, under the photographic skills of Mike Rhodes and his daughter Simone Rhodes and others, documented the seizure of homeless property, dragged in some lawyers, and they won a $2.3 million lawsuit. Since then, homeless encampments have been treated with a certain amount of respect in Fresno, but the police began cracking down. So they were going to crack down, actually, in December, there was a plan to crack down it's about a week before Christmas, a week or two before Christmas. They were going to disperse 100 people from the homeless encampment that had been there for 2 years or a year and a half. So activists there under Mike Rhodes and others held a press conference. They brought out literature and material to suggest that if the city didn't act within 2 weeks on other issues around homeless shelter, and the city has millions of dollars from literally millions of dollars given to them by the federal government to end the 10-year plan to end homelessness. Of course, what they want to do is end the homeless rather than end homelessness, and they aren't spending it in any meaningful way. I think piddling amounts are now going out under homeless czar of Fresno, Greg Barson. We've talked about that on the air before when we had Mike Rhodes calling in from Fresno. He's the editor of the Community Alliance newspaper and the activist, as I said, who was involved in the Kincaid lawsuit. Anyway, one of the responses of the activists was to hand out, or to threaten to hand out, I don't know if they actually handed out these maps yet, of foreclosed and abandoned housing in Fresno and to give homeless people places to go. It says, go take over these houses. Nobody's using them. You know, they're falling apart. Take them over and, you know, shelter yourself from, you know, sub-zero or sub-freezing temperatures anyway in Fresno. In response to this, the city moved on an encampment, so they were going to go after it. These activists said, okay, we're going to go over there, we're going to photograph this, we're going to set up a manger in front of this, sort of a manger scene with Christ and Mary and three wise men, and you can come and bust the whole thing. So the police nervously backed off from that one, and they postponed it until January 6th, which is yesterday, of course, to do another. Of course, January 6th is, as they may not have known, is the Feast of the Epiphany, or the Three Wise Men, which is... you know, we three kings of Orient are. It's also, I think, an Eastern Orthodox celebration. And so they chose another religious holiday to go after the poorest of the poor, an unwise decision. So the activists got together, and they were going to have a whole bunch of people there singing, we three kings of Orient are, and doing something similar. And here's some of the wording I got from this. I've heard that the city of Fresno, this is on the 2nd of January, last Saturday, for this upcoming crackdown on January 6th. Mike Rhodes writes, I heard the city of Fresno is going to put up a fence around the Ventura and F Street encampment after the cleanup. If so, this would be similar to what happened on H Street. They go in, evict everyone, put up a fence, and then 90 days later they bulldoze the encampment. And the reason they have to wait 90 days is because of the federal court decision, you can't destroy homeless property for 90 days. You have to hold it. Something that the Santa Cruz Rangers don't do. They will post a notice, and then 3 days later they'll come in and they'll destroy everything. This happened recently to several people downtown. One street performer, Ricardo, lost all his stuff within the last 2 weeks because of this. And others have repeatedly, if you follow this show, complained about this. And I'm hearing from attorneys in other cities that they are interested in supporting a Santa Cruz move to hold these vandals, and I'm talking about public officials like Mike Rotkin, City Manager Dick Wilson, Parks and Rec Ranger, Chief Ranger John Wallace, accountable and responsible for this behavior and legally liable. You know, let their property be sold at auction so that they can pay back some of the crimes that they're engaging in. Anyway, the city of Fresno's plan, according to Rhodes, is to put a fence around the Ventura and F Street encampment
and then 90 days later go in and bulldoze it. On the H Street, they paid a security guard to be on the site 24/7. The H Street was a previous encampment, which they did just this to. If you had lived there and wanted to reclaim property, the guard was supposed to let you in to get it. If the city of Fresno keeps up with this strategy, all the vacant lots in downtown will eventually have fences around them. Funny, how will they pay for these cleanups and fences? But they refuse to provide the encampments with drinking water, trash pickups, or toilets. And, of course, you know, is anybody here surprised? You know, it's you don't want to help the undermenschen. They'll only multiply, right? Another person wrote, I stopped by the Ventura and F Street homeless encampment today. According to the notices posted at this encampment, this was on Saturday, the eviction is still scheduled for Wednesday, January 6th, starting at 8 a.m. I will be there to document what happens. And this was key to what did happen. I was watching the internet traffic on this, and there were at least a dozen people, many of them respectable house people, are going to be down there with video cameras and their friends and signs and media to just say no to this bullshit. Who else is going to be there? Has anyone heard anything about the city's plans to relocate these folks, find them housing, a campground, or anything? I just find it hard to believe that the city is going to evict the homeless people from the encampment without giving them any place better to go. Well, you may find it hard to believe, but it's standard practice. By the way, it looks like there are now 100 people living at Ventura and F. Again, that's Mike Rhodes. An issue related to this eviction came up at the ACLU committee meeting last night. In Fresno, the ACLU actually takes an interest in these things, perhaps because their lawyers won hundreds of thousands of dollars in the last lawsuit, although I understand much of that was donated to the homeless population. In Santa Cruz, with Mike Rotkin and Coonerty involved with the ACLU and Rotkin on the board of directors, and even before that happened, you didn't have the ACLU interested in doing anything to guard the civil rights of homeless people, with very minor exceptions. I think they opposed a part of the parking lot panic law. They said, okay, make it illegal to sit in your car and read a book in a parking garage that's publicly owned, but not in a parking lot, because parking lots are safer. They didn't come up with any statistics that showed massive assaults in parking garages. But, you know, it's the perception that's important. So if somebody looks homeless and menacing, that's really enough to suspend the Constitution for that particular area, because after all, we want our employees and our tourists to feel safe, however ungrounded their fears may be. Getting back to Fresno, the ACLU in Fresno raised the issue of the legality of city sanitation workers confiscating homeless people's property. Some members believe, and I think they might be correct, that confiscating property is not the role of the city sanitation department, and that became a basis that actually ultimately resulted in the stalling of this whole eviction, which didn't happen yesterday. The homeless people who were willing to remain, and there were only a few of them who stayed, some of them because they couldn't leave, they were crippled or injured, didn't have any place else to go, were left and were left alone for the moment. I'm going to now play some audio from that, from Fresno. You can go on the website of the indiebay.org/Central Valley if you want to hear it again yourself. I'm not going to play all of it, don't have a lot of time, and I do want to get in a few street interviews. Plus, I'm going to try to give you an update, if I can find it on the web, of the Santa Cruz City Council's agenda coming up on Tuesday. They do have the first meeting of the year, and you should know what kind of shenanigans they're up to.
Hey, Fresno, what time is it?
It's time to Stir It Up!
Welcome to Stir It Up, a weekly program produced by a collective of local activist organizations in Fresno. Please join us as we educate, agitate, and pontificate.
And this is KFCF 88.1 FM in Fresno. My name is Mike Rhodes. I'm sitting in for the regular host, Pam Whalen. She's down in Los Angeles today. I have a couple of very interesting guests and some interviews today. Phil Connolly and Bill Simon, both from the ACLU. They're both board members. Bill is the chairperson of the ACLU, are with me today. We're going to be talking about what's happening with the ACLU and specifically about a homeless eviction that was supposed to take place today that the city had planned. They'd actually planned this eviction two times. They were going to evict the homeless 8 days before Christmas, before it was brought to their attention that a manger might be put up at the encampment with baby Jesus in it. And many people thought it would be interesting to see city workers hauling baby Jesus out by the toe and throwing him in a dumpster. That didn't happen. They postponed it until today. This morning they were going to go out and clean up this encampment. I say clean up. Euphemistically, they were going to destroy it. And at the last minute, they called it off, and we're going to tell you why. It has a lot to do with the ACLU, but first we're going to go to the calendar, the KFCF calendar. We're going to listen to the calendar. We'll be right back with that interview with Bill and Phil.
Welcome to the KFCF Community Calendar. Here is a list of upcoming events for the week of January.
About issues regarding community sanitation personnel or garbage. Bill and I had been
And wheelchair accessible. Wednesday, January 13th, the Unitarian Universalist Church hosts a community reading of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s speech, Beyond Vietnam, A Time to Break Silence, at 7 p.m., 2672 East Alluvial.
Okay, well, I'm interrupting this discussion from Fresno because I have on the line with me Santa Cruz Mayor Mike Rotkin. Hi, Mike.
Hello.
And you have the first city council meeting of the year coming up. As I understand it, one possible issue, and I haven't yet checked online to see if the agenda is up, is the ban on all future new medical marijuana dispensaries.
That's not actually on the agenda for this coming meeting. That's, there's nothing about that on that meeting.
Oh, good. I'm wanting to. But while we've got you, I know that you had a you had some comments you made to the Santa Cruz Weekly, you and Don Lane, about differences of opinion you had with the staff report as it was reported out of the Planning Commission, which essentially pushed for a complete ban on all new dispensaries other than the two existing ones, of course, which aren't new. You said you thought one or two more might be a good idea?
Yes.
Why should there be any restriction on medical marijuana, let's say, like, say, there's already severe restrictions on where they can be placed because of the zoning law of 2000. Why should there be any kind of restrictions?
Well, I'm not clear whether the best way to handle the situation is to do it through, you know, the limited opportunities versus, like, a, you know, ban on the total number. I think the reason that we're concerned, I'll speak for myself, the reason I'm concerned that we not have, you know, a proliferation of huge numbers of medical marijuana centers is that I don't think any city really wants to have gain the reputation as kind of the marijuana distribution center for, say, Northern California or something. And so I know things like that usually don't weigh heavily on you, but we're trying to attract business to town. We're trying to deal with the fact that we're having an economic crisis here, that we've had to make, you know, major cuts, millions of dollars out of our budget. And whereas I think it's important that we provide people with medical marijuana, and we're one of the first cities in the
sure, but let me interrupt you for a moment.
I think we want to avoid a situation where we have, like, lots and lots of these centers, and people start to think Santa Cruz, oh, that's the place with all the medical marijuana centers. I don't think that's the reputation we want. I think that's the bottom line here, frankly.
Well, I mean, San Francisco has many centers, and although they did, you know, full disclosure, adopt a ceiling on new medical marijuana centers, but they had a whole bunch.
Yeah, and a lot of cities around the state are kind of moving in that direction.
And I'm afraid that is a prohibitionist move that's kind of part of an anti-marijuana mentality. What's your sense on that?
I think some of that goes on. I mean, a lot of our problem in Santa Cruz, frankly, has been all along that marijuana should be legalized, not just medical marijuana, but just marijuana in general. It probably should be regulated like alcohol.
Are you supportive of this new the initiative that hit the ballot and perhaps the Hurrah initiative that's looking to get on the ballot?
You know, I haven't looked at those in detail, but in general, I've supported every marijuana measure that's come before the state, and I probably support these too. I just don't know the details of them, so I don't want to say yes till I've actually read them.
Uh-huh.
But generally, no, I think that it should be legalized. It should be taxed, legalized, and, you know, some kind of control so it's not available to elementary school kids or something. And I think that's where we should be going. When that's not the case, when it's still an illegal drug and being regulated as heavily as it is, it basically creates all kinds of pressure on people to try and deal, you know, how do you respond to it? So, for example, whereas I think everybody should be able to smoke marijuana, and every adult should be able to smoke marijuana, and there should be, you know, no limits on its distribution and so forth, I don't want people having shootouts in front of my house over what's now an illegal and scarce commodity. And so I don't want it in front of anybody else's house either. So, you know, the city ends up enforcing laws against sales of marijuana, not because I think, you know, it's a horrible thing that it's sold, but because in the context we're in, and I know this is kind of a subtle point, but when you're trying to manage a city, you don't want to force on neighbors the becoming a sort of drug dealing center.
Well, again, drug dealing, you got to watch your language here in this regard. I mean, marijuana is not a drug
and that's perceived as a drug. And
right. Do we want to back this kind of misperception? Another question I have for you is, what about San Francisco, which is considering a smoking ban, but that excludes medical marijuana, whereas Santa Cruz's ban includes medical marijuana? Are you prepared to issue to press for an exception to this so that people who want to smoke medical marijuana can do so medicinally in public places if they need to without running afoul of the smoking ban?
No.
Why not?
Because I think people can find a way to go smoke their medical marijuana somewhere other than on the Pacific Avenue or somewhere in downtown open spaces. It's, you know, again, if it were legal, it would be, you know, no better to smoke it there or anything else. I mean, I think we ban smoking because we don't want people smoking and blowing smoke in people's face on a public sidewalk. I mean, that's the bottom line.
But medical patients? Come on. If a person has a medical condition and they need to do it, you're going to say this particular medication can't be used?
They can move a half a block off of Pacific and light up.
Well, actually, half a block isn't really far enough if they're within 20 feet of an open window or something. But
well, then it's a whole block. But I mean, the point is, it's not like we're sending people to Siberia. They can get off of the main Pacific drag and go and light up. And I think it's overreaching to think that somehow they're all suffering because they can't have their medical
marijuana.
It
just seems strange.
Right out there in public on the sidewalk.
Yeah, it seems strange that Santa Cruz, you know, the liberal mecca, the great progressive city, and with the socialist mayor. I take it you regard yourself as a socialist.
I do. I do. Yes.
Sure. Is backing restrictions that are worse than San Francisco on this, and we could go into the sleeping ban too in Los Angeles, but I won't at this point. Again, on the medical marijuana subject, this summer it required, I think, almost a unanimous vote for the city council to enforce a moratorium killing the two clubs' applications for the time being that were had finally found landlords who were willing to, you know, rent to them in spite of the ambivalent position of the Obama administration, which says it is stopping prosecutions, but then the more go ahead anyway.
Okay, so would you like a response?
Why did you vote for this when your one vote would have said, you know, it's okay to have one or two clubs open up?
Because basically when marijuana was medical marijuana was being enforced against by the federal government, very few and only intrepid individuals were willing to come forward and set up dispensaries. We had two in Santa Cruz. When the Obama administration announced they were no longer going to prosecute people for medical marijuana distributions, we had about 12 people call the planning department. How do I set up one of these clubs? How do I make it happen? And that was the moment where the staff said, wait a minute. Do we want to, like, just, like, give everybody a permit and have all these places open up, or is there some reason to think we don't want to be a place that has a proliferation of a lot of centers?
But isn't the permit process...
That's why the moratorium makes sense.
I understand.
Let's figure out what's going on and study the
process. I understand that argument, and we talked about it at length in Free Radio, but the law is pretty restrictive about opening a medical marijuana distribution center. It's kind of hard to find a place to do it. You yourself pointed out that for 5 years there was nothing open. And you pointed out on Free Radio, the main reason for that was because it was hard to find a landlord who was willing to do that. Now, you're saying that maybe now with these claims that there's going to be a more, you know, liberal approach to by the Obama administration,
right.
That's...
It's not proving that, but I mean, at least there's indication they're moving that.
Well, there's still, but there's still prosecutions going on, and there's still busts going on by federal, you know, authorities. Okay, well, when is this likely to... We actually called you originally. We're talking with Santa Cruz Mayor Mike Rotkin to ask about the upcoming medical marijuana distribution center ban that's proposed by the Planning Commission, voted 5-2 at their...
I think it's going to be on our agenda on the 26th, but I'm not sure. I haven't seen that agenda yet, but I just know it's not on tomorrow. I mean, on Tuesday. This Tuesday, on the 12th. It should be on the 26th.
You're pretty sure it's not on tomorrow?
I know it's not on tomorrow. I've seen that agenda.
Right, you mean not on Tuesday.
Right, on Tuesday, on the
right.
12th. It's not on, for sure.
Now, what's coming up on Tuesday you think is important to people they should know about if they want to come to the city council meeting you think is an important issue?
You know, Let me quickly grab my agenda. I have it here somewhere. But it's a slow agenda meeting. I think it's fair to say there's not a huge number of things on there that would be of massive public support. But I don't want to mislead anybody. Let me get a quick look here and let you know what I think might be interesting to folks. Or pardon me for taking a second. Here we go. There's no 7 p.m. session. There'll be oral communication at the beginning of the meeting, close to 3 o'clock. There's going to be, let's get to the bottom here.
Why no 7 p.m. session? You know that makes it harder for people who are working to come, right?
Because there's not enough stuff to really manage the whole meeting, you know, of that extra amount of time. So one of the things that's on is an interest rate being set for rental property security deposits, but the rate's so low that it's just a pain in the butt both for the tenants and the landlord. So we need to look at possibly suspending that till the interest rates on passbook, you know, accounts and stuff goes a little higher than it's been before. We're looking at a participation in a renewable energy assessment district. I think that actually is quite interesting. That would allow people that don't have equity in their homes, perhaps tenants, with landlords to develop solar systems on homes, which would save people a lot of money on energy and, of course, be good for the planet.
By the way, Mike, on that subject, are you still taking what I regard as the kind of absurd position that rent control is something you will not support at City Council as a resolution or even a study of it until such time as there's some massive public outpouring because of the fact that in 1982 it failed and because when it was proposed at that point, landlords raised rents? I mean, you're claiming that was the claim you made on the air, that you're not interested in any kind of investigation of rent control by the City Council because landlords will then raise the rents. That was an argument you used then. Is that still?
No, I'm against it. What I said was, I didn't say that's the reason why. I'm against it because it's going to fail, because the landlords have already more than demonstrated their ability to refer anything the City Council does to the ballot, and when it gets to the ballot, we got our asses kicked. That happened 3 times in a row. And whereas if anybody wants to organize a rent control campaign, I think that's great. I wish them all power to them. I'm not going to oppose that rent control. I support the idea of rent control. I don't want to waste my time on a measure that's going nowhere. And what happens, and this is what I said on your show, what happens is the only thing that comes out of it is people bring the thing up, they start to organize it, they will eventually fail, but in the meantime, some landlords being nervous that something could happen or who knows what or something,
yeah, I know,
use the opportunity to raise the rent. That's
well,
what happened.
Well, what about renter protection ordinances? That
same
was
thing.
Raised.
We had a just cause eviction ordinance the City Council passed in 1982. It took the landlords 10 days to gather enough signatures to refer it to the ballot. And so
you don't think there's
been
any
well organized? We don't.
There's no improvement.
Santa Cruz, Robert, just so people understand.
But don't you think the city? I mean, are you saying that the city is so benighted that there's been no change from 1982 to 2009 or 2010?
That's what I'm saying. When it comes to this issue,
you are such a cynic, Mike.
Yeah, there we are. Because the problem is it's statistical, Robert. In Santa Monica, where they passed rent control, they had 78% renters. In San Francisco, there's 68% renters. And that's been pretty
constant. How about Cotati?
Pretty constant number. And I know that in Santa Cruz, there's 53% renters. And it's just not a high enough percentage. I mean, I went out and knocked on doors for rent control. It's not like I was a past supporter of this. Worked really hard on it. And what I was surprised to find when I knocked on people's doors is the number of tenants who are caught up in the foolishness of the American dream that somehow someday they're going to be big, rich landlords.
Right, sure. San Jose, however, has passed a renter protection ordinance, and I don't know, they haven't passed rent control, but they passed renter protection. Why can't you do what San Jose does? Or at least raise the issue?
Because, the percentage of tenants in San Jose is probably up there at 70 or 80%, and we're a small town in Santa Cruz, and we have a very small percentage of renters, relatively speaking. It's 53%. It's not enough of a margin to have it. It's a political reality. So I know people like to be idealistic and think, let's just go run our heads into brick walls. I'm not willing to do it.
Well, or at least raise the issue and try to raise public consciousness on the issue. I mean, people are in worse shape than they were in 1982, right? I mean, although that was a trough of a depression.
Let me make a suggestion I bet you support. The City Council shouldn't be the only group raising political issues in Santa Cruz.
But I'm talking to the mayor of Santa Cruz, though. I'm talking to you.
If people support rent control, let them organize a campaign and try and do it.
Yeah, I know. You say the same thing about anti-war actions. You say the same thing about a lot of other things. I would love to see that happen, too. But I'm talking to you. You're an individual who could be a leader in this issue, and you're not. That's always concerned me, and that's why I keep bringing it up to you.
Well, there you go. I've given you my response.
You have, and I appreciate that. Anything else on the agenda we should know about?
No, that's just to get an idea of how little there is.
And now I'll ask you a difficult question that I know that you've refused in the past to let the public know when and where you're going to appear publicly. as is, you know, some mayors of some towns have been willing to do under pressure from First Amendment Foundation and other groups that feel that city officials should let the community know where the mayor is going to go when she or he goes.
Let me give you two responses, Robert.
Well, I'm wondering if you're willing to let us know in the next month, you know, where you're going to show up so people
can
you're not willing to do that.
No, what I'm willing to do is tell people I'll be at a city council meeting where they can come and talk about the issues we're involved in.
But you'll arrest them if they give you a high-old salute.
That's my sentence. I'm happy to come to anybody who wants to. In a lot of these other cities, you need to, like, find out where these bastards are hiding so you can go confront them, because they never will meet with you. They'll never talk to you. You have no way to, like, have a conversation. And I'm happy to meet with any group that wants to, or individual that wants to meet.
And I acknowledge you have done that. In fact, that was the second reason I'm calling you. But my point is, too, that appearing in public does allow for people to engage, and you know we do, in protest activities, which are an essential part of democracy. And by concealing your where you're going to make public appearances, you're actually trying to, it seems to me, to deter those kind of activities inappropriately.
No, I think I'm trying to protect the other groups that invite me to their events. To not have their
but it's not their event. It's a public event because you're the mayor. You know, that's the point. It's
not
their event.
I went to a jazz club presentation the other night at the Bocce Cellar. It's not a public event. I don't think Bocce Cellar wants you down there protesting me. If you want to protest me, come to city council.
Well, maybe
invite me to your meeting.
We could all play some jazz together there, Mike. Anyway, we'd like to meet with you. And again, I want to point out to the community that Mike has been on, probably one of the only council members that's repeatedly been on free radio, particularly on my show. And for that, thank you.
You're welcome.
And also, you've appeared, you've been willing to meet with very critical, although not necessarily very hostile, HUF members, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom people, on issues that we strongly disagree on. We're looking to meet with you next weekend, the weekend after this coming weekend. We're looking for Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. When would be a good time for you? Do you have any way of,
I'm afraid I don't have my calendar here, but I'm happy to, I will meet with the group and just a matter of getting a hold of me when I've actually got a way to respond.
Sure, can you
make a proposal and I'll be happy.
Yeah, can I ask you here, Dan, as though I realize I'm using the public airwaves for this, but can you look into your calendar and send us some possible times when you'll be free, and then we'll work it out with our
weekend time during the day.
Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, any time, but my of course show time, which is you wouldn't want to do that.
Yeah.
9:30 to 1 in the afternoon is out.
Okay,
can't do that.
Other than that, I'll find a daytime on Friday, Saturday, or Sunday and let you know what my options are.
Okay, in the meantime, don't be smoking any medical marijuana downtown, Mike.
I don't have a need for medical marijuana, so I don't smoke it.
All right, well, I'm glad to hear that. Thank you very much.
Take care, Robert.
Bye-bye. And there you have it. Mike Rotkin doesn't mind being reached at home. I commend him for his accessibility in that regard. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. I have a lot of other bad things to say about Mike Rotkin, but, you know, you got to give the devil her due, and that is, you know, he answers the phone. He's not hanging up and hiding out like Ryan Coonerty, the vice mayor, is. So, good for him in that regard. What about you, callers? You going to hide out and not call in and not give me your opinions? Come on now. 427-3772 is the call-in number. I did stop the discussion at Fresno of the successful blockage of, or maybe it's delay, of the attempt to clear the homeless encampment at, I guess it's Ventura and F? Not sure. Ventura and F, yeah, F streets in downtown Fresno. This was scheduled for yesterday. Activists stopped it. And here's some discussion of that issue.
Call 322-6146. Thursday, January 14th, John McCutcheon.
We're going to wait until this particular
Universalist Church, 26
event section ends.
Alluvial in Clovis, $20 in advance.
And
at the door.
And we have about 15 minutes left
online,
in the show
Fresno
in case you
concerts.com. Call
are planning to get up and, you know, take a bathroom break or something.
Friday,
then it's
January,
Uncle Dennis with From
Martin
the Cream
King,
to the Dregs. Uncle Dennis
Committee
plays
Fresno,
many a tune, most of them.
With the
even your grandchildren have, you know, are too young to, well, actually, most of them, even your father is too young, but he's not. A lot of good tunes for Uncle Dennis. And we do have a caller, so let's see what the story is here. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Hey, Robert, how you doing? It's Andrea.
Hey, Andrea, what's the word?
Oh, not much. A little disturbing what I just heard, you know, Mike Rotkin, you know, telling people you know, basically if they want to deal with him or protest him, to go down to City Hall. But as you know, homeless people like me can't really do that because, you know, if you're going to get indoors for the night and go to a place like the Armory, which is one of our wonderful homeless services, according to Ryan Coonerty, you know, you got to get there by 3:30 to sign up to get up there because they start loading the buses around 5. So, you know, whether they have an evening session or just an afternoon session, that pretty much excludes me out, you know. And it all really pisses me off because, you know, they don't design these services for disabled people, you know, getting woken up at 5 a.m. and then they drop us back off at the shelter at like 6. So we get out, sit outside and freeze our asses off all morning, you know. And the other day, me and a few of the other people that had come back from the Armory went into that downstairs loft area, and the guy sitting behind the desk is, bickering at us, like, okay, you guys got to get out of here. Go on. If you don't have any business in here, then you can't be in there. Well, his fat ass is sitting in there nice and warm, you know, telling us to get back outside. We're bone-chilling cold.
Andrea, where is this again?
At the shelter in the downstairs loft area.
So, in other words, as I know that the shelter was open during the day under Doug Loisel. Is it now closed, or is that just that part of the shelter that's closed?
It's that part of the shelter is closed. Even, I guess, the people in the loft area, you know, they get woken up at 6 and booted out at 7, and they're not allowed back in until 5 o'clock, you know. But for somebody like me, you know, if I want to take a nap during the day, I'd go lay on the concrete, you know, by the doors, by HPHP on the ground with my blanket and pillow, my walker.
Just don't do it after 11 o'clock at night. That would be illegal.
I know. And then there's a woman there that drives a little black car. And when you pull into the shelter area and you drive straight to the back, you know, there's some picnic tables where the smoking area is. Around the corner there, you know, there's like, you know, where those little, that little house, people stay in that little house. Me and this other guy were just sitting up, you know, against the wall there. The Sunday before Christmas, and she comes pulling in and pulls around back, and we're sitting there, and she's looking at us going, hey, you guys can't hang out there, you know? And I'm like, well, and I looked right at her, so where do you expect me to go? And she points, she goes over there, and she's pointing to the smoking area, the picnic tables are, and the ground's all dirty and everything else. I said, I'm not going over there, you know? Plus, it was cold over there and shady. And then she came back out again and said the same thing, and I guess she just gave up because I just didn't say anything, and I didn't bother to move. And
who was,
you know,
this, who was this person?
Huh?
Who was
she
this?
She works there. Some lady that works there. I don't know.
Well, remember to get the name of the person. Remember to get the name, Andrea, of the person who is giving you problems, and also her superior's name, so you can file a complaint or question the policy. I mean, that doesn't mean it's going to be successful by any means, but at least establishes a chain of authority. Have you ever seen Letitia Schwartz, the new head of the Homeless Service Center, about, and have you ever talked to her?
I'm not sure. The only person I really know is, like, I know who Sheila is, and that's about it. But I know this woman drives a little black car. But, you know, and then there's always, you know, the Breakfast of Champions there, you know.
What is that?
Which is a joke. Well, you know, you get your, you know, if it's halfway decent, you get your one egg, your one strip of bacon or one sausage link, and then, you know, your little bowl of cereal that might be halfway decent, you know. Sometimes it's kind of sad, you know, at dinner time when the meal sucks so bad you can't even hardly eat anything on the tray and you just want to dump it, you know. The only one semi-good thing there is, you know, Trader Joe's does donate a lot of food. A lot of times get like salads or whatever. But, you know, the main thing is I've lost my place. You know, I haven't been able to even look for a place. I mean, I can't shower regularly and keep up my personal hygiene as well as I could if I was housed. I've been trying to look around. I even tried to beg the housing authority to see if they could help with a motel voucher, and they can't help. So, you know, it's virtually impossible. I do have a cell phone now, but, you know, even so, it's just too difficult, you know, and I'm not sure what to do about it. But I just know that, you know, Ryan Coonerty tries to say that we have such great homeless services, and, you know, there's just so many things wrong, and there's things that need to be changed, and they have got to find a way, another way, or some sort of a better program to that specializes in dealing with homeless people that are disabled. And you know, and I can't even go and voice that at City Hall. Otherwise, if I do, I'm going to be out for the night, you know. So it really pisses me off.
Well, you will get your 2 minutes at oral communications if you go to City Hall. So
yeah,
think of that, 2 minutes.
The meeting starts at 3. That's when sign-ups start for the armory, you know. So if I go there and then wait for oral communication and then have to truck all the way over to the shelter, you know, I take that chance of not being able to get in because the listing, fills up really fast. It's winter time. So, yeah, I don't know. It's really frustrating, and I'm really stressed out. And I don't know.
I'm glad that you're raising these issues. I think, you know, it's always more effective, Andrea, to raise these issues if you can do so with other people. Otherwise, and then for that, it has a couple of values. First, it's not just you. Ah, that lone wingnut calling in again, whoopee-doo. Person who's only concerned with their own selfish interests, or that person who had a drug problem, or that person this, or that person that. None of which in any way detracts from the reality or importance of what you're saying. But if you can get other people, you can also, you know, empower them. And you can also show that you work together. That presents, you know, more of a forceful and significant factor to be reckoned with by the politicians in power. I know that, for instance, we were circulating tent city petitions, which look for, you know, the right of homeless people to form their own encampments. Not that that's the most wonderful thing in the world, but it has to be legal if there's no place to go. And they form their own encampments anyway, but then they get destroyed by Chief Ranger Wallace and his fine, labor-ready crews. What is your feeling about, have you heard much buzz about the idea of setting up a tent city? Have you heard anything about that, or is that not in your venue?
Not really. I haven't really heard anybody talking about it, you know. It seems like as far as other people besides me that have gone to the armory, you know, we don't really appreciate getting woken up at 5 in the morning and getting dumped off around 6 and having to sit out in the freezing cold.
Is the armory full pretty much these days, or?
Yeah, it just, you know, wasn't really full New Year's Eve because, you know, a lot of people got paid and I guess went out and did whatever it is they do. Other than that, yeah, it's pretty much full every night.
And how are the staff treating you up at the armory?
Oh, God, those monitors. Oh, power tripping. A lot of them are just power tripping. And, you know, it's like prison almost, you know. I mean, it may as well be in prison, you know.
Well, you are guilty. Wait a minute. You are guilty of homelessness, you know. Therefore, that is a crime in Santa Cruz. So, in a way, you're getting your just desserts. But no dessert, actually. It's kind of a catch-22.
Yeah. It's really fucked up.
Well, Andrea, I appreciate your calling in, and as usual, I'm going to leave you out there freezing. And although you're not going to the armory tonight, it sounds like.
No, I've been at a friend's house since Tuesday night, but you know I'm probably going to have to leave and go back to Santa Cruz tomorrow. So most likely I'll be back at the armory tomorrow night.
I hate to say this because, you know, but still keep those reports coming in because I think it's important that people out there get a view of what's happening, however little they choose to do about it, or we choose to do about it, I should say.
Yeah, you know, and I'm not, you know, I don't like being homeless. You know, I'm not choosing this as a career or life, so I really suck, and I want to get out of it, and I'm having so much trouble. It just seems like, you know, I can't get ahead, can't even keep up, let alone get ahead. You know,
but are you truly one of the worthy poor?
I think so. I mean,
we'll see how worthy you are.
Some of those other people there, they just don't care. That they don't care if they stay there the rest of their lives, I guess. But anyway, I'll let you go now. Thanks. Bye.
No, thank you, Andrea.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And I can tell we're approaching the end of the show because there begins to be a lot of chatter on the margins as the voluminous Uncle Dennis arrives in the studio. The studio often seems too small for a man of Dennis's stature. Thank you.
The studio is too small for the both of them.
Again, Dennis is with his friendly rivalry. It's always fun when Dennis comes into the studio demanding I pay my dues or lose my show, which I believe is coming up next meeting.
You got money?
Well, I can gladly pay you Tuesday for a free radio show today. Yes. Well, that's almost it for free radio. I think we'll play a few street interviews to show you that there really still are people on the streets, as well as a bunch of housed posers posing as homeless activists in the Free Radio Santa Cruz studio. It looks like there isn't going to be, if Mike Rotkin is correct, an item of banning medical marijuana dispensaries, new ones, on the upcoming agenda. It sounds pretty boring, but I'll be back on Sunday to give you a more thorough analysis of the stuff that Rotkin says is so ordinary that it can be thrown onto the afternoon agenda with no evening session. This after a whole, essentially a month without city council meetings. I suppose we should all be grateful in a certain sense, but unfortunately the machine churns on without the city councils being present, without allowing that wonderful opportunity that Rotkin allows us. He won't tell us where he goes for his public appearances, but his public disappearances happen at city council, where if you try to talk at any time other than during the 2 minutes allowed you, if you show up at 3 o'clock, or if you try to talk on the agenda items for more than 2 minutes, and you have to cover 16 agenda items in 2 minutes, by the way, because that's the new rules that Rotkin, Coonerty, and Matthews have cooked up, well, you may be out of luck. It is true that you can try to collar Rotkin before the meeting or after the meeting, but a lot of people are a little embarrassed to do that. I think collaring him might be an excellent idea, but I don't wish to be accused of terrorist activities. After all, we do have ways to deal with those. They aren't called enemy non-combatants or enemy combatants. They're called enemy belligerents. Now, Obama has made a very meaningful change in that whole situation. And as you noticed, as he promised, he closed Guantanamo this month. Whoops! No, I'm sorry, he didn't close it, but that surely will be coming up one of these days. Those people are being held for 7 years in solitary confinement with the occasional dog nipping at their heels, possibly some nice nude photos, and who knows, foreign objects here and there. That's what the U.S. government is doing as we enjoy our evening dinner and, nestle back in our beds or our sleeping bags. So your money is serving a useful purpose. This show is archived at huffsantacruz.org. If you want to catch me at home, 423-4833 is the number. And if you've seen any more instances of Officer Schoenberg running around telling people that because a heckler doesn't like a musician, that means they have to leave, or any other instances of the kind of outrageous police behavior that has become second nature in Santa Cruz toward poor people, give me a call at that number, 423-4833. We also have a Huff member who is taking calls on musicians, if I'm not mistaken. Is that accurate, Huff member, or not? She nods. You want to give out your number on the air, or no? All right, leave a message for me, and I will forward that to the anonymous and rather camera-shy Huff member, who nonetheless is going to be compiling these accounts for the upcoming Street Performers Guild meeting, which should be coming up soon once Tom Noddy reappears in town in February, and Brent Adams, the liaison, decides to stop selling firewood and actually getting his ass together to hold the Street Performers Guild meeting. I want to thank you all for being a listener to the show, and those few of you called in, good for you, and I'll be back on Sunday. Here's a little intro music from Uncle Dennis as he attempts to slip in between my camera, tape recorder, and various other sundry items and set up his own show. Thanks.
I think we need the Pogonet Ranger in here to kind of clean it out a little bit.
Oh, for sure. I think he could confiscate much of the equipment, similar to his buddies in the FCC, who made a clean sweep back in 2004. Or was it a dirty sweep? I'm not sure.
They cleaned us out.
Yeah, they did. But the listeners, by the way, we need your help, listeners. Do consider donations and all that sort of thing. Money, cash, equipment, checks, negotiable bonds, gold bars. You send it in, we'll use it. Uncle Dennis here is a mastermind. He does flights to Switzerland every so often, and he can turn that into really usable moolah-boolah. That's it. Thanks for being with me on this edition. Uncle Dennis, take it away with From the Cream to the Dregs.
All that glitters is gold, and she's buying a stairway to heaven. When she gets there, she knows if the stores are all closed. With a word, she can get what she came for. She's buying a stairway here. There's a sign on the wall, but she wants to be sure, 'cause you know sometimes words have to mean. In a tree by the brook, there's a songbird who sings. Sometimes all of our thoughts
you never know what you'll find on Free Radio Santa Cruz either. Maybe it's Steppenwolf, maybe it's Led Zeppelin, maybe it's Boston. Who knows? I'm Uncle Dennis, and want to welcome you to From the Cream to the Dregs. And every week from 8 to 11 on Thursdays, we explore the music of the 60s and the 70s with an emphasis on rock and roll, psychedelic, and blues. And if you really like that stuff, you might want to stick around, because we wander all through the library, taking a little zig and zag here and there. You never know what you might find. And, of course, if there's something you want to hear, it's 427-3772 is the number to call. We might have it if you want to hear it. Anyway, coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll have the Brew of the Week. Tonight's Brew of the Week was a donation, and we always like those. If you want to bring in a brew for Uncle Dennis, well, feel free. All I suggest is make it dark. Dark brew. Anyway, like I said, the Brew of the Week will be coming up in about 15 minutes. And then, of course, at 9 o'clock, the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 and www.freakradio.org. And if you really like the music, stick around at 10 o'clock, where we do an entire hour of one album or one artist. That's called our Spotlight Group of the Week. So stay tuned for all of that. Of course, at 11 o'clock, the Church of the Subgenius presents their Hour of Slack, and then a variety of program continues all through the night. Right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, supported by you. Donate today. Go to our webpage, www.freakradio.org, to find out how.
Night in New York City, smoke like water.